it's ages since I had a Fox's Rigid.
I've got 30 years of Roman porn backed up on this.
Hair on the outside, and then the inside is too surprising.
How'd you mind me now?
Hello, and welcome to How Do You Like Me Now, the podcast where we go back and relive the golden years of kids' TV. I'm Will. With me, as always, is Liz. Hello, Liz.
All right.
How's it going?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alive.
Alive.
What more do you want from me?
Well, just that. Just that and a little bit of conversation. That's all I ask.
You want to do the appointed conversation up top, do you?
Let's do the banter. Get the banter squarely out of the way. And then we'll move on to the meat of the podcast.
I've actually got something I want to have a conversation about this week.
Well, do tell.
Cadbury's. Mm-hmm. Doing the old ploy. It's been a long time since there's been a ploy that I enjoyed from a company.
Yeah.
They've got these mystery bars. So there's two mystery bars.
There are two mystery bars.
You buy the mystery bar. Mm-hmm. It's your standard Cadbury chocolate on the outside. Inside, mystery flavour.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you have to decide. You have to guess. Guess what the mystery flavour is. I hadn't heard about this, and then people started saying to me, what do you think the mystery flavours are? I was like, all right, you got me, Cadbury. I will get involved.
It's a national conversation. It's who shot JR all over again.
Indeed. That's a dated reference, isn't it?
Right. It's who pushed Tiffany down the stairs all over again.
Okay. Pretty dated, but better in our lifetime. So we sampled the mystery bars, and they're both pretty disgusting.
I like them.
Do you?
I'm quite keen on them, actually, yeah.
I think they've put them as mystery bars because no one would buy them if they were marketed as what they actually are.
Well, I think that's a reasonable thing. Based on the guesses we've had, I think that's probably reasonable to go. Most people look and go, I'm not having that.
Well, the first one has a sort of a raspberry jammy flavour in it. Mm-hmm. And people, I think, are trying to do too much with that. I've seen people guessing cherry Bakewell and stuff like this. I think they're going too far. I definitely think the jamminess is the main flavour.
Yeah.
And this isn't like my hot tip of what I think it is, but it has reminded me of a biscuit that I believe has disappeared from the shelves and called the Jam Mallow.
The Jam Mallow.
I've just spent nearly an hour racking my brains because this you're trying to decide what the flavour is. And I'm like, oh, it reminds me of something. It reminds me of the old Jam Mallow. There was a time and a day where you could have a plate of biscuits, right? There wouldn't be a hobnob to be seen, Will. What you'd have on it is a pink wafer, an iced party ring, and a Jam Mallow.
I feel like I should be playing the Hovis advert theme.
Those
music.
Days are gone now.
Da, 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 da. See, now you say that. I went when I started the job I'm in now about 3 years ago. Mm. I went into one of my places of work that I supervise, and I was asked if I'd like a cup of tea, which I yes, gratefully accepted. And I was presented a cup of tea and a small plate of biscuits,
right?
That included a selection of biscuits from the selection box.
You're not going to tell me there was a Jam Mallow on there.
There was not a Jam Mallow on there, no. But there was like a bourbon, a cookie. There's a custard cream.
These are things that are still out there. Bourbons and custard creams are standard. Mm-hmm. But I think now they're seen as cheap. These are the cheap options.
Yeah.
And if you really want to impress, you've got to go with the more luxurious chocolate-coated biscuits.
You've got to go with like the stem ginger dark chocolate-coated. The ones that come in like in a plastic box.
The Borders.
Yeah, that's the Ferrero Rocher of biscuits.
Anyway, but I'm just saying there was a tie... when we were happy. I don't think I was ever happy with a pink wafer. A pink wafer to me was always a nonsense biscuit. I don't like wafer.
Right.
And the fact that it was pink wasn't enough of a novelty to me.
See, now I quite like a pink wafer.
No.
To me, a pink wafer is like candy floss in that it's designed to be inhaled in large quantities.
Now, that is absurd because the chief difference between candy floss and a pink wafer is there's nothing more pleasing than putting candy floss in your mouth and it just dissolves and becomes just sugary goodness, right? But you put pink wafer in there, it's like, who put cardboard in my mouth? What is this? Drying every ounce of moisture is gone. It's gone.
Well, I don't disagree in that comparison, but the thing is, candy floss has the disadvantage that after you've eaten it for a little while, your hands are completely sticky, your mouth, everything around your face is sticky.
Your hands don't need to be sticky. Have it on a stick.
So what happens then is you get candy floss on your nose.
Part of the joy.
Part of the joy is having sugar stuck all over your face.
Right. I think maybe you're just a messier eater than most people. Also, you have a beard. You're not the prime target for candy floss.
No, but there was a time...
Old men with beards there was shouldn't a time eat candy
when I,
floss.
There was a time when I didn't have a beard.
Yes.
When I was a prime target for candy floss.
You were still a messy eater.
Yes, yeah, I was. But no, I just say, I think pink wafers, the fact you can eat them... You don't have one pink wafer. If you get a packet of pink wafers, you're not having one. It's like chocolate fingers. You're having the lot. You know, they're all going to go.
You know there's nothing I love more than a chocolate finger. Why? I would die for chocolate fingers if they asked me to, which I don't think they would.
The chocolate fingers or Cadbury?
Not Cadbury, the chocolate fingers. But then you got me a chocolate finger that was not Cadbury issue, and it was utterly, utterly disgusting. Awful. Because, I'm sorry, the chocolate finger has to be the crumbly shortcake biscuit. Mm-hmm. This was just regular biscuit inside.
Yeah.
It was just a crunchy old shit biscuit. Didn't like that.
No. You've got to be able to snap a Cadbury finger with your tongue. I feel like you have to be very...
Sure,
to,
I mean, I could do
you
that.
You should be able to put a Cadbury's finger sideways in your mouth and snap it with the slightest pressure from your tongue.
Do you feel like you can't snap every biscuit with your tongue?
No, I feel like I can, but I feel like some take more than others. Like, you know, if you've got, like, one of those, like, giant cookies, you know, that's going to, like, not the soft ones, but, like, the proper, like, you know, the Fox's quite rigid ones, that's going to take more effort than a chocolate finger.
Oh, it's ages since I had a Fox's rigid.
Well, haven't we all?
I think there's a YouTube series in this.
Yeah.
Can it be snapped with our tongues? Just us trying biscuits. Can we snap it with our tongue? Yes. Surprisingly enough, you can snap every biscuit with your tongue. To move on to harder foods.
Yeah.
Toblerone. If you can snap one of those with your tongue, I owe you a pound. You don't need my pound. You've already got a skill that's worth way more.
If you can snap a Toblerone with your tongue, then you've got superpowers, frankly. You should be fighting crime.
Fighting crime?
Yeah, I mean, very specific crime.
Oh, it's a very specific crime.
Help, we're trapped in a chocolate factory. Never fear, I have the power of the tongue.
Talking of shit biscuits, what did we watch this week?
Well, this week, Liz, we continued our series of poll losers.
Series of losers. It's what you all wanted.
This week, we watched Aquila.
Yes.
Aquila. Classic yes. CBBC fare from the 90s.
Total garbage.
Well, that remains to be seen, Liz. We'll...
What was this up against, either way?
This actually has lost twice.
Oh, has it?
Yes. So it lost against Rugrats. It was fairly trounced by Rugrats, let's be honest.
Okay.
It also lost our first ever public poll when it was up against Bucky O'Hare and Brum. And it came a resounding third place.
Oh, wow. So we've actually done all of those now.
We have done all of those. So this is our first ever poll. We finally delivered on, I think, a promise at the time of maybe we'll do the ones that lose later on. But here we are.
Mm.
So we've done them. So despite the fact that people have never voted for it, really, there are people
here
out there.
Here it is.
Yes. And there are people out there who really, really like the show and remember it well.
Yeah. And there are people like me who just didn't believe it was on because I have no memory of the title. I have no memory of it when watching it. And not even like a memory of, you know, oh, I don't watch that show. Like literally it's like from a parallel universe. This show didn't happen.
See, now this is the thing. I've got really vivid memories of this show. Something in this must have just spoken to me as a young child that it's always stuck with me.
Some kids really like the Romans. Was it the Roman element?
I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe. I don't remember particularly enjoying doing the Romans at school, but maybe I did.
I actually loved the Romans.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It was just one of the things I enjoyed. Shit on the Tudors. Bloody Tudors. On and on about the wives. On and on. No, I liked the Romans, learning all the names of the different, like, places they called in the UK. And
yeah.
I don't know. I just thought it was cool. Just cool. Anyway, I remember reading a book, which I think they've made into a film, but quite different. Mm-hmm. It's called, like, The Eagle of the Ninth.
Yes.
They made it into a film. It might have been called The Eagle.
I think so, with Channing Tatum and Jamie Bell, I believe.
Yeah, those people would be why I didn't watch it. anyway, I liked the book, so I was into the Romans for a little while. And also, so this is called Aquila, which means eagle.
Mm.
And this episode, the first episode, is called The Eagle Has Landed.
Yes.
Which actually is an excellent name for encompassing not only a pun, but also the entire concept of the show.
Yeah, it's that solid episode titling.
The episode title, tick, big tick, no notes.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
What about the...
Everything else.
What about the intro? Let's talk about the intro.
Does it have one?
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, basically you've got the title and then you've got a voice intoning in Latin.
Some Latin mutterings, yeah.
Yeah.
Rubbish.
And then it cuts to like a camera zooming across the landscape or through space and over the landscape with like some electric guitar noodling over it. And
that gave me big Red Dwarf vibes.
Yeah?
Yeah, because the guitar is sort of like that, it's like the 80s hangover into the 90s, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And then the graphics were very much BBC budget.
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
So they were more than passable at the time, I'm sure.
Mm.
But now looking back on it, yeah, big home movie vibes.
Yeah, it's got that little... I mean, you know, it's a shame because these things kind of show up under the light of looking back at them. But I'll be honest, I think this intro promises like quite a lot. You know, there's a sort of, the mystery element of it's in Latin and it's the chanting, and then suddenly you've got guitar and you're flying through space and you think, yeah, okay,
you're this talking is going to be fun. I didn't even realise that was the intro. I thought that was just the beginning of the show. Like the Latin intoning, I thought was the intro. And I was like, well, that's boring, crap, rubbish. And then the other bit was I thought that was just things getting started.
No.
And then all of a sudden, we were just looking at a boy called Jeff.
Yes, we are looking at a young lad called Jeff who's got a pickaxe and is just digging a hole.
And an anorak.
And an anorak. Of course, it was the 90s, Liz. He's a small boy. He had to wear an anorak.
There's two boys there, Jeff and Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff is the more exciting one.
Yeah.
What a naming mishap. Now, these boys would be about our age, right?
Yeah, I think they're meant to be about like 11, 12 at the time.
Were there any people in your year called Jeff?
No, there were no Jeffs in my year.
Jeff isn't the right name. It's not the right era of name. That kid's dad would have been called Jeff. He's not called Jeff. Speaking of dads, there's no dads in this. They've all gone, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, there's no dads in this at all.
Don't blame the dads for leaving. The women are terrible. We'll get on to that. We'll get on to the mums. Got a lot to talk about mums. But yeah, Jeff and Tom is the other boy. Tom's fine as a name. Works in any era, I think.
Yeah. But Jeff is very adventurous and doesn't really think.
If you're called Jeff, by the way, that's fine. But it just stuck out to me as being like, you know, imagine if the other one was called like Ian. You'd just be like, what is this? What's going on?
They grew up to become accountants.
Yeah.
No, but so we have, I mean, were there any like particularly out of time names from kids at your school?
We did have an Ian.
You had an Ian?
Yeah, but it really stuck out at the time.
See, we had a Gavin that stuck out for the same kind of reason. But I feel like Gavin was a bit more acceptable at the time.
I was going to say, I've known a Gavin who was around my age.
Yeah.
Were there any other out of time names? How do you feel about Alan?
Alan. See, now, for me, I don't think there can be young Alans. I think
we had
only
several Alans.
You had Alans. Okay.
Multiple Alans.
Alans, plural.
Yeah.
See, now, that doesn't seem right. I think this is the thing, right? Because, like, old school names are back in vogue, have been for quite a few years.
Yeah.
My last job, there was a woman who brought her baby in and introduced into the office as Stanley. And yep. I really struggled to hide my reaction.
You really balked at Stanley.
And then I was like, oh, cover my face. Fortunately, no one saw. So
but you don't realise this is how it goes. Names are in a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So they come back round, you know? But I think mums are much more into the fashion of names. Because I've seen a lot of stuff online where women just love, like, looking at names. And then they present these to... Because this is obviously happening in your very kind of average sort of straight relationships where the man's sort of like, what? What is it?
I'm going down to football.
And they present these names to the men, and the men are like, what? It's like, oh, what do you think about Meadow Sweet? Winnie is the one I can't stand that's Winnie. Coming back. The thing is, people love Winnie. That's fine. It's fine if you love it. I'm not saying it's not a pretty name. I'm just saying the first thing I think of is the poo. But they come round in cycles. So, like, people our age are going to give their kid a name that they think is, like, terribly beautiful and, like, Esme or, I don't know, Clarabelle, whatever it is. But then those kids that they have are going to grow up, and is our generation going to have grandkids called like Chantal,
Chardonnay,
Jade?
God, they might do. That might be it. And then those people will have children called like Dennis and Ethel.
Oh, now I'm confused. All names are stupid when you think about it, really, aren't they?
Yeah,
if you think about it too long, you'd be like, this is ridiculous.
There's too much stock put in them.
There's far too many letters in my name.
That's why you shorten it.
Yeah, because obviously my name's Elizabeth, which is just unusable. There's too much of it. Why is there so much?
Waste so much time filling in forms for all those letters.
As a kid, I didn't think I was allowed to be called anything else, so I was always Elizabeth. And then literally my first day of secondary school, I met who became my best friend through secondary school, and she went, Elizabeth, I'm not going to say all that, I'm going to call you Liz. And I just went, okay, fair enough, and became Liz permanently. It's weird to me to hear any other name now.
See, it is weird, though, with names like that. Like, I have a friend who... his name is Chris, and I don't think I've called him Chris in at least 20 years.
Mm.
I just call him Rev or the Reverend because, well, that's his name. He's not a reverend.
No.
Well, he is technically, but
he's not, though, is he?
No, he got ordained on the internet to impress a girl.
Which is absolutely meaningless. It's definitely, you know, and probably expires when you don't pay every 6 months.
Oh, I'm sure. But... nonetheless, for the last 20 years, he has been the Reverend.
I think this is something that is much more common in the male culture.
Yeah.
Is nicknames that have a very obscure origin and then stay around forever.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Women don't tend to do it so much.
I hate that I'm always sitting here just saying men do this and women do this. And it's like, I don't believe in any way that all men are the same, all women are the same. I don't believe that. But then... when you look around at life, so many stereotypes just keep coming true over and over, don't they?
Yes.
You can't get away from that fact. So, yeah, because I've thought about this with you before. Almost every friend you have, there's somebody has a nickname for.
Mm-hmm.
And almost zero friends that I have, I can think of any nickname which isn't just a shortened version, a standard shortened version of their real name.
Yeah, that's it. It's one of those things that, like you say, it's just there. But anyway, we're here to talk about Jeff and Tom.
Jeff and Tom.
Yes.
Good old Jeff and Tom.
So it's the first day of their holidays, and they've gone on holiday with their mums. And
classic holiday activity. They've gone to dig a big hole.
They've gone to dig a big hole on day one.
Again, fill me in on male culture, Will. Is this something that boys do on their holidays?
Yes.
Didn't even blink.
No, I will speak for all boys on this. All boys,
yes,
up to a certain age, their main activity, if they go somewhere, will be digging a hole.
Oh, you say up to a certain age, but I know when I was a kid, I would go to the beach with my family, and my dad would spend his time digging a big hole.
Of course he would. Of course he would. How well would he do?
He would be happy when he'd hit water. You know, if you dig enough.
Oh, if you dig enough sand out and you get the water underneath.
The water level. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He'd be happy with that.
Okay. So I just have an image of you all going to the beach, you and your sister as young children, and just going along your day, going, right, I'm off to dig a hole. Just going off.
You'll go off. He just sits quietly to the side, digging his hole for no reason at all.
Would he fill the hole in when he was done?
Probably my mum would make him. Okay.
See, now, I would dig a hole, and my brother would, but you reach a certain age, generally the age at which you stop taking a bucket and spade to the beach, when you just stop digging holes.
Well, I think probably he used our bucket and spade.
Oh, God. That's... So you didn't get to use your bucket and spade because your dad was too busy excavating.
We would probably arrive at the beach,
right?
Make a very pitiful sandcastle that we weren't particularly invested in, then go off to throw stones in the sea, and he would commandeer it to dig his big hole.
Oh, amazing. Sorry.
And now I think about it, I have genuinely no interest in ever digging a big hole.
What? This is no. Why would you?
But I can see you doing it.
I think it's a thing that, like... Thank you. I think it's a thing that...
Are we sitting here and saying that men are more interested in holes?
Yes. That's not to say that women can't also be interested in holes.
Exactly. I believe in gender equality.
Yes.
Women can be interested in holes. Just put that. This podcast is pro women and holes.
Yes. Exactly. Always has been.
Always will
never
be.
Never in doubt. But anyway, Jeff and Tom are digging a hole.
And they're vindicated.
They are vindicated because
they're digging their big hole because they find something.
Oh, they do. Well, Jeff falls into this cave and he's startled by a rat, and then he's startled by a skeleton.
As you would be.
Oh, yeah. And then he gets Tom to come down into the hole with him, and they uncover, well, it's like a big rock, they think it is, that they can sit inside.
I think it looks like a go-kart.
It does kind of look like a go-kart, I think. I think it's like a go-kart or maybe like a roller coaster car kind of thing.
Yeah, it looks like probably like Scrap Heap Challenge.
Yeah.
Made it for them.
Yeah.
Just got some car chassis. And then dinged it about a bit.
Yeah.
And then they were like, it's got to be cutting edge, yet Roman. I'm a bit confused by that. Didn't really know how to pull it off.
Because what they find is a ship.
A vehicle. A conveyance.
It's a conveyance. Yes, that's the best description for it.
It's got big gaudy buttons.
It has.
It has no instructions.
No.
They have to figure it out. Because they immediately, like when they get in it, they go straight up in the air. And it doesn't seem to have any means of propulsion.
Well, no. Well, it's kind of like it levitates and it moves forward under its own power. Mm. Do you want to hazard a guess what it is?
Don't I know what it is?
What do you think it is?
Well, it's like, it's the Roman guy's chariot, except somehow the Roman guy is probably an alien.
The Roman guy is not an alien. He is a Roman.
Right.
He was a Roman, rather, but it is a spaceship.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's a, and I have it here, it is a life raft from a larger ship built by the Irillians from the planet Deneb.
Deneb.
Deneb. Yeah, so there you are. That's what it is. It's a life raft from a bigger ship.
They mean like an escape pod, do they?
I think they mean like an escape pod. Okay. But it's got some incredible like attributes that they figure out over the course of the series.
Oh, yeah. We'll come to those in the second episode. Because this obviously is the first episode, is them discovering it, and they just work out very basic flight controls.
Yeah.
But the things we see in the second episode are truly extraordinary.
Yes.
Including that it can translate to English. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's leave that. Let's leave that until we get to the second one. Right now, they're just in a pod hovering over the Earth.
Yes.
And we get the character of the boys is coming through. Jeff's very gung-ho.
He is. He doesn't plan ahead, Jeff. He just
goes for it.
Just goes for it.
Tom is a worrywart.
He is a worrywart. Tom's very concerned about things, thinks they should stop and think about things and try and avoid doing anything if they can. And, I mean, this is hammered home by what we see of their mums.
Can we talk about the mums?
Gladly we can talk about the mums.
Horrific mums.
Mrs. and Mrs. Exposition.
The mums, okay?
Okay.
Are basically there to be hated on.
Yeah.
Whoever wrote this either hates women or just hates mums. Because what we see of them is them complaining about their children, not knowing their children, not understanding their children, and being hypocrites. Because they're just there, hanging out, having a moan.
Yep.
And what's the first? Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. She goes, they're talking about the character of Jeff and Tom, like we just were. Mm-hmm. You know, that Jeff kind of pushes Tom to be a bit more risk-taking. And one of the mums says, Tom will make sure he keeps his feet on the ground, cut back to Aquila in the air. Oh, it's like, okay, so you're just here to take the piss out of the mums, not knowing their kids. And I thought, fair enough, it's just a little joke, right?
Yeah.
But then later on in the episode, we see them interacting with a farmer and, well, they're walking through the farm at first and they're going, oh, it's so good for the boys to see where food comes from. They think it just comes out of the supermarket, but here they see milk that comes from cows and eggs that come from chickens. And the farmer pops up and says, do you want one? And I was thinking, oi, oi, this just got interesting. But he means a chicken. And they're like, And he wrings a chicken's neck in front of them.
Yeah.
In order to give them a chicken for dinner. And they, having just said about how their kids don't know where real food comes from, are sort of like take it politely, but then chuck it in the bin. They don't know what to do with it. I mean, I'll be honest, I wouldn't really fancy, like, doing a chicken up.
Well, no,
from
I mean,
scratch.
I think if you're standing next to like a field of live chickens with a farmer and the farmer says, do you want one for tea? They're very good. I think it's fair to say, first thing you'd say is, that's a very kind offer. I haven't the first clue how to prepare a chicken.
Yeah, mate, I wouldn't know where to start. Please keep your chickens.
Yeah. But no, he's very accommodating, this
but
farmer.
But once given it, if a farmer gives you a dead chicken, right, mm-hmm. would you try and make an effort with it?
I think I probably would. I'd worry I'd end up killing someone, though, because it's not just a case of plucking it and chopping bits of it off. You've got to gut it as well, haven't
you?
It's
all the innards.
That's the thing.
What are you supposed to do with that?
I don't think I could deal with it. I wouldn't know what to do with the innards. I wouldn't know what to do with it. You know, I'd just be like, I don't know. Maybe I'd just like I don't know what I'd do. Like,
no.
Portion bits off and cook them.
We are not farmer types. We're not huntsmen, woodsmen. We haven't got skills.
No, maybe we should get those skills.
Do you think so?
Maybe
the apocalypse comes.
Might come in handy, just saying. Mm. You know, when after the bombs are fallen and we're left with irradiated chickens, we're going to need to know how to prepare those irradiated chickens.
No, it's too much work. Just let the bombs take me, Will.
Just let the bombs take me.
I'm not meant for a brutalist, survivalist landscape where I've got to butcher my own meat and everything's irradiated. Just let me go. You'll find a new wife. She'll only have one eye and three arms, but you'll make a life together.
When the Tesco delivery goes, take me with it.
Yes, exactly. I'm not meant for that world.
Fair enough. Well, okay. If there's a post-apocalyptic survival situation, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Maybe I should learn how to, like...
You learn the skills. Just rely on you. Until which point I'm not useful anymore. And just leave me out for the raiders.
So the mums.
The mums. So, yeah, I was really cross with the depiction of the mums because they're just hypocrites who are moaning about the kids and they're exactly the same. But I was like, you know what? This is the first episode and it's obviously mostly about the boys. And I was prepared to sort of like look past it. And then the next episode we were going to watch was from the second season. So I thought, there they will have developed. They're exactly the same. Even worse, to be honest. I was like, oh no, I can't believe that you would Right, the only sort of like supporting cast of these boys are their mums. They've got no dads. There's not like a gang of friends that we see like all the time. It's mostly the mums. And they're there, they're just awful, just awful people who have no personalities apart from hypocrisy and whining. Like, truly, this person must hate women.
I think this is the thing. You and I have watched a lot of things where there's like, where kids are the main focus, but they have parents in the mix.
Yeah.
And the parents are distinct characters. And, you know, sometimes they have their own little storylines. They get involved in the main kid's storyline, but they are a distinct character. In both of these, it just seems like the mum's only purpose is just to tell us things about the kids.
Yeah.
That it's easier to tell them than show them how to do it. Mm-hmm. It's easier to say, oh, yeah, my Jeff, he's a very reckless boy, very doesn't think anything but your Tom. He'll keep him on the straight and narrow. Oh, yes, but my Tom's far too cautious. He could do with some of your Jeff recklessness. Anyway, let's talk about our children some more and nothing else.
Mm. Yeah.
They might as well not even have names.
Do they have names?
They have. I believe they're called Pam and Sally, but they might as well not have names.
Okay. I didn't realise they did have names, to be honest.
Well, this is it. The thing is, the farmer that we meet just for the purposes of giving them a chicken is more memorable than the mums.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, that's...
He's actually quite funny. He gets a couple of laughs in this.
Oh, he does?
I don't know. He's got a bit of character. This is the thing. They aren't characters. They're just stereotypes.
Yeah, and they're only there
to... exposition.
Exposition, that's it. That's all they are. It's just a vehicle for information. But the boys, having figured out how basically what to do with this Aquila kind of thing.
There's an excellent conversation that, yeah, they've slightly figured it out. And then there's an excellent conversation of what basically are we going to do about this? Because they're sort of like, oh, we better go and tell someone that we've got it. Because I guess you think that, you know, you found something that isn't yours and it's quite unusual. We should tell someone. And then they discuss what will happen once we've told them. And I think it's Tom says, the government will have it, I suppose. So I don't know what he thinks he's found, you know? Like, clearly what he's found is unknown in history and science. But do they know it's that important?
Well, I mean, imagine they must think something's up because, you know.
Oh, something's up.
Something's up. Because if this was a thing that had been found at all before, they'd have heard about it.
Yeah.
You know, anything, if anyone had found something that could levitate and fly and do all these things without an engine, you know, you'd think, okay, someone will have, like, tried to reverse engineer that technology. But we'll have flying cars.
Yeah. But the thing is with them is they sort of treat it like they found, like, a go-kart, you know, that they can just ride around in, ride around the countryside and have a bit of fun on their holiday.
Yeah.
But then when asked, what do you think we'll do when we tell someone we've got it, is the government will have it. Like it is, you know, like a weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah. I mean, Tom's like logic of this to Jeff is, I think he says, come on, Jeff, your mum won't even let you ride a bike on the main road.
Which is a great point. It's a great point.
She's not going to let you keep an intergalactic spaceship.
And that is what convinces Jeff. Because Jeff, he's a good boy. He was all up for telling everyone, but he did think he was going to get to keep it and ride around in it. And it's like, mate, you can't even go on your bike. So they decide to kind of keep the Aquila bit a secret, mm-hmm. and tell somebody about the cave with the skeleton and that business.
They tell the mums, and so the mums call the police. And the local archaeologist... Well,
yeah, because they tell the mums they found a body.
Yeah, that's it, which a bit misleading.
The mum goes, oh, I hope this isn't one of your jokes. Well, I hope it is one of your jokes. Tell me you're joking about having found a body. Oh, you're not? Oh, okay, we better actually call the police then.
But, so the police turn up and an archaeologist turns up.
He must be a rapid response archaeologist.
Well, I'll tell you for why I think he is.
Yeah.
Okay, you may have seen him in something before. Do you look familiar?
Definitely familiar, 100%.
Right. He is Saunders in The Living Daylights. So
Yes.
So that's why he's rapid response, because he's secretly working for MI6.
That actually makes his character make a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, he turns up. They go down into the cave, they're exploring around, and they're finding all sorts of things. The archaeologist shows them all the things they found. So it's like, oh, here's a coin from the reign of this emperor.
He's already brought, this is why I say his rapid response, he's already brought loads of stuff up, and it seems like it's the same day. That's not generally how they do archaeology. I've seen them with their tiny brushes, brushing away little bits of dirt.
He also does house clearances.
He's gone down there, and he's got like, look at all this, come on lads, bring it up to the top.
I love it because his archaeologist chops, I think, are a little bit in doubt because he picks one thing up and goes, this is interesting. I have no idea what it is. Well, then how do you know it's interesting?
Well, it's a good point because what he is holding up looks like some Roman bondage gear, but it's apparently a seat belt for Aquila.
Yes, it's a harness.
Honest.
That Handley says on it, he who rides on the back of an eagle can fly through the sky or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And of course, part of that is eagle. So it says Aquila as part of it, which is how the boys learn what Aquila means.
Yes. So yeah, so this harness thing, which the mum says looks like a harness for a pilot.
She says, yeah, it looks like the Roman would get in his like jet aircraft and they will have a little chuckle because that's actually hilarious. But yeah, that kind of clues the boys in on what Aquila is and maybe that they weren't that safe, the two of them riding around in something that has no doors.
Yeah. that seems like a bit of a flaw for a spaceship to have no doors.
Well, not if you've got your seatbelt.
That's true. That's true. So knowing they need to replace the seat belts, they go and ask their mums for some rope.
They ask one mum for rope.
Yep.
The other mum for cushions, which I would have thought they could just pick up cushions off the sofa themselves.
Yep.
But you know how men are.
It's a holiday let. They need to know which cushions are okay to take.
Well, none of them if it's a holiday let. And they ask the farmer for crash helmets.
Yes, and he has two motorcycle helmets from his wife's motorcycling days.
Okay, well, we did say he got a laugh because that was funny.
And so now with their harnesses made of rope.
They've done a real good job on the rope there. Oh, they must be scouts.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's reasonable. That's probably why they're digging the hole in the first place. Get their excavation badge.
Oh, really?
Oh, when you're in the scouts, it's all about getting the badges.
I know. I was a brownie.
Yeah.
Don't think I was a guide. I don't think I did that.
See, I was a scout for about 2 weeks, and then I kind of gave up scouting.
Did you?
Yeah.
I was a brownie for a bit longer, but only because my mum had bought all the uniform. You know, she had kitted me out in everything. I had a baseball cap, I had the jumper, I had the woggle.
Oh, you've got to have the woggle.
Yeah.
The woggle's an essential bit of kit.
Yeah, yeah. And you used to get points if you turned up in your uniform and it was all proper.
Okay.
And I used to get maximum points every week. Everybody else would be turning up just like they just run in from playing and all they put on was their woggle. And there'd be me like stuffed up in all the brownie guide gear, every single bit of it, because mum had spent all the money getting it. There's no way she was going to let me leave any of it at home.
You're there with your girl guide branded cap and your girl guide branded shoes, your girl guide branded parachute just in case, your reserve chute packed away as well. I love girl guiding splashed across it.
Again, it was brownies, but yes, that was me. I was literally that kid. I don't even think I liked it. I only wanted to do it because one of my mates was doing it. And then when I got there, I was like, it is all about badges. And I didn't like doing badges. And then there's like going away on camp, and I didn't like being outside.
I tell you what sunk it for me at Scouts. They were basically... When I joined Scouts from Cubs, you were given a bit of grace where you didn't have to wear the Scout uniform or get all that stuff. So I went along in my Cub uniform for a couple of weeks, and it was a case of, okay, well, I think the first week they said, welcome, new Cubs. We've basically done our quota of badges this year, so we're not going to do any more badges until, like, next term, which I was like, well, that's not great. And then they said, okay, we are going to go on a camp in, like, 3 weeks' time, so you need to plan out what you're going to do on the camp, what badges you're going to get. And again, my patrol leader had said he's got all his badges, wasn't going to do anything, and we spent 20 minutes discussing, well, they spent 20 minutes discussing whether they could make a pavlova for tea.
A pavlova?
Yeah, they were really obsessed with making a pavlova. I don't know why.
Your experience of Scouts is very different to any experience I've ever had. I've never been with people who really wanted to make pavlova. Especially... I've made a pavlova and there weren't any people that wanted to make it.
15-year-old lads sat around going, well, what I think is if we got this and this, we can make a good pavlova. You can't make a pavlova without an oven. Watch me. I'll make a pavlova without an oven. This went back and forth for a while, and I've sat there going, what's a pavlova? And then I went home and asked my mum,
yeah,
and she was like, oh, it's this. It's meringue, and you cover it in fruit. And I don't like fruit at the best of times, but they were talking about kiwi. I'm like, I don't know, eat anything with kiwi on it.
Oh, no. Kiwi. Ugh.
Yeah, this is it.
I don't believe that kiwis are from this earth. No, you know, like Aquila, like you said, it's a spaceship.
Mm.
That makes sense. You look at that and you go, no, nobody here made that. Kiwis the same.
Kiwis, you think kiwis and
kiwis
Aquila.
Kiwis came from a different planet. They just landed here one day. They are sentient. I'm convinced. Why is there hair on the outside and then the inside is too surprising? I don't believe that they are of this earth.
I mean, I'm with you. I'm not a fan of... I don't like kiwis at all.
I don't like them. But there's other fruits I don't like, but I believe they're from this planet.
Mm.
I don't believe that of kiwis. And there's other surprising fruits, you know, fruits like a dragon fruit is very surprising, but I still believe in it.
I'm with you. Right. 100% I'm with you on this. Right. 100%. There will be people out there thinking, this is a weird conversation.
It's so lucky that we're married.
Yep. Like in sync.
I don't think anyone else understands this.
Totally in sync, right? Because when you said there are the weird fruits, I was thinking she's going to say dragon fruit.
Yeah.
And dragon fruit, 100% I'm on board for, comes from here.
Yeah.
Right? It's got like a petal formation on the outside, okay?
Exactly.
Yeah. It might be white with little things, it might be pink, but it looks like it came from this earth.
Yes.
Kiwi does not. Kiwi looks like an alien testicle, right?
That's what it looks like.
Yep.
If you cut into an alien's testicles, that's what would be inside is kiwi fruit.
Yeah. And how would you eat an alien's testicles? Cutting them off, scooping them out with a spoon. That's what how you do it.
I've never thought about it, but I do agree.
One assumes.
You better hope the aliens don't come for us now.
No, oh, yeah. It'd be all right.
Just let them take me.
We'll have our survivalist skills.
No, just let them take me.
We'll stage a resistance, Liz. We'll humiliate them by taking their testicles and then not doing anything with them, just throwing
them
away.
Put them on a pavlova.
Put them on a pavlova and then not eat that pavlova.
The ultimate humiliation.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, I can't believe it. They took my testicles, put them on a pavlova, and no one's touched it.
Have we talked about Aquila at all?
I think we have a little bit. But basically, this first episode, they decide to keep it, and that's where we are. So,
it's not a very exciting first episode.
No, it's not. I think it doesn't promise a huge amount for what's to come. But they do, like,
it
things
neither promises
develop.
Nor delivers. So I find it disappointing. They should at least have, like, fired a rocket and thought this thing can destroy the universe. Something to make me actually care about Aquila and not just think it's a metal go-kart.
Well, it's all right, because we're moving on to Series 2 now.
Well, now, Series 2, Episode 4, so you would think a lot has happened, wouldn't you?
You'd think. You would
and plus, the boys, I would say, are at least 3 years older.
Yeah, I think they're a couple of years older now. Certainly the voices have broken.
These are teenagers now. Before, I was willing to accept them as children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are teenage boys. More evidence to this fact is that one of the opening lines is like, oh, I thought we were going to see the finals of the women's beach volleyball. I don't want to think about how pervy these kids have become in the meantime.
That's Tom who says that, and he says, I even borrowed the Polaroid. Holds up a Polaroid camera.
He's got a Polaroid camera. That, I don't like that. We all know why women's beach volleyball is played in bikinis, and it's not for any health and safety reason.
Not at all, no.
Why would you want to see the finals? That's the other thing. That, right, listen to me. Because you get this kind of joke sometimes, right, about men like being pervy over women. Why do you want to see the finals? I think it'd be much more fun to see the opening rounds, right? A lot more falling over. A lot more people who aren't that good at beach volleyball don't really care about beach volleyball.
You think the shit teams will be more titillating by being less focused on the game?
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying to you.
I'd never considered that, but it does
the
kind
finals,
of...
The finals, they are elite athletes purely focused on sport, okay? They're like a finely tuned machine. The opening rounds, I'm just imagining the Benny Hill theme tune playing over them. What I'm saying essentially is it's an offensive joke about boys going to perv over women trying to do sport. But if you're going to make an offensive joke, just at least make it make sense.
Just the idea that there'll be countries in this volleyball tournament going, oh no, I better have fallen over again. Oh, I better jump quite a lot for this ball. Maybe it'd be easier if I stood on this trampoline. Anyway, but this is...
Oh, can we say the episode title?
Of course we can.
It's called An Elephant Surrounded by Blind Men. Now, I didn't know how many episodes were in series one. And it turns out it's not very many. It's like six.
Six, yeah.
I was assuming that they'd done like 30 and that maybe they went with the conceit of having like a proverb with an animal in every time, because they started with the eagles landed. Yeah. I was like, were they trying to do a proverb with, or some sort of phrase with an animal every time? And they have run out. And so now they've gone with an elephant surrounded by blind men. It does turn out to have relevance later in the episode. It's
I like that idea, though. Next week, only Nixon's dog can go to China. Too many cat cooks spoil the broth.
Yes, that sort of thing.
Oh, no, but no, there aren't. It's not a series of animal pun-based sayings that make up the episode titles. This whole episode is about truth being subjective?
Yes. Which is what that story is, the elephant surrounded by blind men. They tell it later in the episode.
They do.
But essentially, is it like a little parable or something?
Yeah, well, the parable, it's told weirdly in this episode, because the parable, as I'd always heard it, is that it's a room, a load of blind people are standing around an elephant, and they've all got hold of a different bit, and they all think it's a different animal, a different thing.
Well, they all describe it.
Yes. So one's got hold of the leg and he goes, ah, this must be a tree trunk. Another one has the trunk and says, ah, this must be a snake. Another one has like the side and says, ah, well, this must be like a hippo or something, you know. But in this show, the guy who's trying to explain the proverb says it's a proverb where there's a load of blind men around an elephant. They've all got hold of a different part of it. They all know it's an elephant. And I thought, that doesn't help. If they all know it's an elephant, then the whole proverb is ruined.
No, I'm sorry, you're both wrong. You're both wrong, right? The idea is you say to them, what is in front of you is an elephant, mm-hmm. right? And so they describe to you what an elephant is. And for each of them, an elephant is a different thing.
Right.
So if it's the leg, it's like, oh, an elephant must be a type of tree because this is like a tree trunk. Or if it's the tail and it's, oh, an elephant must be a type of snake because this is feels like a snake. It's not, they all know it's an elephant, but they're each like, well, I'm in front of a leg, so I've got an elephant, but it feels like a leg. I don't know what you're talking about. And also it's told weirdly in this, because he says that there's a word in Nepal which means truth that essentially means an elephant surrounded by blind men. It's like, no. It's a parable. It's not a single word. I apologise if there is anybody from Nepal who wants to dispute that. And there is a Nepalese word that encompasses an entire story. But I don't think it is.
I don't think this is like the Inuit and having 14 words for snow.
Yes, yeah. And I don't even know if that's true. That could be a load of hooey.
Hooey. A load of hooey, yes.
But anyway, so this is the idea that truth is subjective, because they are all describing what is truly in front of them, but it is different because they've each only got that small part of it.
Yeah, and this is the thing, they all seem to be using this, in this show, they seem to be using it to justify all kinds of different approaches to the truth.
Yes.
Like, I mean, let's roll back to the start, because we're getting there. So Tom's mum has met a fancy man.
Well, she's met a man.
She's met a man, and she's very excited by this man. But Pam, Jeff's mum, is saying, no, Jeff's mum, who's not called Pam, Jeff's mum is saying to her, you need to like take it slow. You need to make him work for anything he wants. And she says the truth is no basis for a relationship, Pam, which might explain why she's single.
Yeah, you've got the one mum in this who is all of a dither about this new bloke she's met, and the other mum who has a very toxic view of men. So she says, I mean, it starts off by annoying me because they're watching a workout video and eating chocolate, which, again, is just this thing of hating women. And it's like, let's just make a joke out of, and I've done it myself. I have done it myself. I've been like, oh my God, I must start my diet today. I must start my exercise regime today. I'm so depressed. We'll order junk food because I'm too depressed to go on. I've done it myself, but it's just the fact that everything they do is hypocrisy. Anyway, and so yeah, she's telling about this new bloke that she's got. And I did enjoy when the mum who's the disbeliever was like, you are controlled. You are self-contained. And then the other mum sees the bloke like coming out the window and she's like, oh. She's so enamoured by this bloke, she can't help herself. I did enjoy that, but mostly the mums just make me feel ill because it's so, I don't know, I can't stand it. Anyway, so yeah, they have their version of the truth, which is they're hypocrites.
The lads, meanwhile, the reason they're not going off to watch the beach volleyball finals is because Jeff has found a playback mechanism in Aquila. So,
oh God, this is ridiculous. Aquila has a black box recording of 1600 years.
Yes.
And it just so happens that the tape has run out now, exactly at the point that you need it. And it started taping over the Roman centurion, who was obviously the body they found this thing with. Just so happens it started taping over the things he did. Just right when they find it.
I would argue that if your society has invented remote video capture that lasts 1600 years, you must have invented like a side B so it doesn't automatically wipe from the oldest.
Well, I tell you why it's no side B, because it's an egg.
It's an egg, yeah.
That's it doesn't have sides.
It doesn't. That's the downside of an egg, that it has no downside.
Unless you cook it, then you can have a side because you can have it sunny side up.
Yes, you can. Yeah, you can.
But this is an egg.
This is an unbroken egg.
Unbroken egg.
That That's has only called. One side. Doesn't egg only have one side if it's unbroken?
Where does one side end and the other side start?
Well, I guess it's got an inside and an outside, so it has two sides.
On no recording equipment I've ever had has it been like, right, the first side is the inside and the second side is the outside.
That would be great if that was the method of cassettes. Okay, you've filled up the outside, now crack it open and use the inside.
Crack it open!
No, so, but in looking through this video, Jeff has found that the Roman centurion who had Aquila, 4 days before he died in the cave, carried out a heist.
Yep.
Basically parked in front of a column of soldiers, used something on Aquila to knock them all out, and nicked a giant chest of coins.
Yes, he's like a highwayman.
He is. He's like a Roman highwayman.
Yes.
And amazing that he did that, because all Roman roads obviously go straight. You can see he was coming.
See him coming for miles.
Well, that's it. That's incredible.
Yeah. Can't sneak up on him.
Yeah.
So we know what he's saying. The boys know what he's saying to the Roman soldiers.
Yeah.
Despite the fact they're speaking in Latin, because Aquila can translate with English subtitles.
Yes.
Despite being made before English was invented, or certainly before the version of English that these guys know, it can translate.
Yeah.
Quite impressive, isn't it, Will?
It is. Aquila has, they've unlocked a range of tools with Aquila now.
Mm.
So previously, before this, it was stuck on Latin.
And I bet it was.
They've managed to... Why do you make that sound dirty?
I don't know.
Why do you make that sound...
I don't know.
What would that mean?
I don't know. I didn't mean to make it sound dirty. I was being disparaging.
Fair enough.
Those mixed up.
No, so they've managed to get it now to translate into English.
Mm-hmm.
It's also got a cloaking device now. So
right.
It can be out in public and no one can see it. It's got lasers. It's got
obviously
missiles.
Is it Romulan? Is it Romulan?
It's not Romulan. It's Illyrian, I think.
Illyrian. Okay.
Illyrian or Illyrian, something like that.
Illyrian.
Yep. It's spelt with a Y and a lot of consonants. It's also it's also got this black box recording thing. It also has a remote of sorts. They program it to respond to a dog whistle. So that if they blow a dog whistle, it will come and fly next to them.
That is an amazing feature.
Yeah, incredible feature. There's a novelization of the series done in 2010 where they update dog whistles to mobile phones. So they use mobile phones to communicate with it.
Yes, great update.
Yeah.
Great update.
The other big feature this has, though, as we discussed...
Relevant to this episode, yeah.
This episode, this display has also a lie detector.
It has an inbuilt lie detector,
mm-hmm.
which it can do on this 1600-year-old recording.
Yep.
So it can tell that the Centurion is lying to the guys that he is apprehending to steal the treasure from. And so they decide to use that feature.
Yeah, they think, well, if he had this chest of coins and he only went to the cave, after I think Jeff says after he laid with two women in Cirencester.
He does say that, didn't he? I was going to ask you about that because obviously Tom asks more questions about what does he do next, what does he do with the treasure? And part of what Jeff says is he spends the next 2 days laying with two women in Cirencester.
Now, there's 2 points on this I want to raise. One.
Yeah.
Did Tom watch all 2 days?
He definitely did. Will, mm-hmm. he definitely watched all 2 days.
I thought as much. And two, what kind of perverted Roman centurion, knowing that his spaceship has a camera on it that records everything, goes to Cirencester and points his invisible spaceship at his bedroom for 2 solid days?
What we're essentially saying is that the centurion used Aquila, right,
mm-hmm.
to make a sex tape.
Yes.
With two women in Cirencester for 2 days.
A 1600-year-old sex tape.
Amazing stuff.
I mean, it's probably a good thing that it's been rolling on for 1600 years and the tape's now wiping itself, because God knows what he got up to before that. You know, there could be all sorts of... You think Roman orgies are a famous thing. Imagine he's filming all of those. These lads would be like white as sheets.
They'd be loving it. They'd be loving it. Much better than the women's beach volleyball.
They'd be worrying about volleyball. They'd be spending all their time in there.
Imagine finding the sex tapes. We're like, we don't need to do anything else. Forget all this flying around, Lark. We'll just watch these.
I've got 30 years of Roman porn backed up on this.
God's sake. They find at the end, don't they? At the end of this, they have other eggs.
Yeah.
That have other recordings.
Yeah.
Hopefully of debauchery in days gone past.
Alien porn, all it sorts really, of porn.
The episode really skims past the Aquila's capacity for making pornography.
The thing is, it's such an unnecessary detail as well, because they could have just said, yeah, he goes straight back to the cave and dies. Not, he spends 2 days laying with two women in Cirencester.
They could have said anything, Will.
Yep.
They could have said anything. He spends 2 days... doing some travelling around. He spends a couple of days just meeting some friends in a tavern. They could have said anything, but they chose Cirencester, and they chose women, and they chose 2 whole days of it, recorded by the Aquila camera.
I just like think the Aquila designer going, that is not what I intended this for.
No.
This was a security system. I did not intend it to be used for making pornography. So they come to the conclusion that the coins must be in the cave where they found Aquila. But
yeah, and the body, yeah.
Yeah, but Saunders, the archaeologist, has told them there was nothing else found and they're closing and moving off site.
Well, yeah, so Saunders has said that he didn't find like a huge thing of coins and that he's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to that site thinking that there won't be anyone there.
Yeah.
But there's still all of the archaeologists there and they start acting very funny,
mm-hmm.
very funny.
Very strange.
Because Saunders straight up says to them, oh, the cave's had a bit of a collapse, so we can't even go down there anymore. And then up pops this woman. Oh, do you want to come down, have a look? Like, oh, sorry, that's just a specialist staff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Alison's not specialist in anything. Useless old Alison.
Alison's not even wearing a hard hat.
No, not even a hard hat.
Yes. So they decide to use the lie detector to find out if the...
Put it on Saunders.
Put it on Saunders and test if he's lying, which...
He's not Saunders, is he? He's Hare.
He's Hare. But he was Saunders in Living Daylight.
We're talking about Living Daylight. Yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah. So Hare, the archaeologist, they find out he's lying. And he comes clean and says, yes, okay, we did find a box of coins. Opens it up and he says, well, this one coin here, in mint conditions, this one is worth £5,000 to £6,000.
Mm.
And he goes, and you've got all of these? He goes, no, we found 33 boxes of coins.
Well, the problem with that is, if you found that amount of old coinage...
Mm-hmm.
You would devalue all coinage.
Yep.
Every Roman coin would be devalued by this haul of 33 crates of the stuff. All of a sudden, they're not worth anything.
Well, he says we find gems, we find jewelry. He says the most interesting thing is this statue. Now, one of these is worth £500,000. We found 14 of them. They're not going to be worth £500,000 now, mate.
No.
They're a dime a dozen.
Dime a dozen, got loads of them, buggers. Yeah. I'll have to go to a car boot to shift them.
This will be like a police auction where, you know, you buy one and then they go, do you want another 13 at the same price?
Yeah.
Because we got them spare. We got them coming out of our ears.
They fell off the back of a lorry.
But it turns out the whole lot is worth 60 million, he reckons.
He reckons.
Well, yeah, he's just an archaeologist. What does he know?
It's worth a lot. We get that. Yeah. We get that much.
But, and Jeff is obsessed with getting a share of it because he found the cave.
He's very money obsessed, isn't he?
He's very money obsessed, which I would think now he's got like an invisible spaceship armed with lasers. There's got to be a way to make money out of that.
But it is very early days of the internet, so maybe he just wants the money for porn. You know, the Roman porn won't get him going forever. Wants some modern stuff. And... they do seem very girl-obsessed now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, Tom, the reason he's much less obsessed with the money, getting this money from the treasure haul, is because he's worried about his mum. Mm. His mum, with this fancy man, basically, he says, oh, I don't trust him, which we can all respond to that. You know, if your parents go on a date, you just automatically don't trust them.
Yeah.
And so
with other people, not necessarily with each other.
No.
Yeah.
And so he puts the old Aquila lie detector onto this guy, Alan Pritchard.
See, another Alan thing here.
Well, he isn't Alan though.
No.
Because the lie detector, when he says my name is Alan Pritchard, shows lie.
Mm-hmm.
When he says that he's not married, shows lie.
When he says he's a chemical engineer, it's a lie.
Lie?
Yeah.
He's lying about everything.
Mm-hmm.
My first thought, the lie detector's broken. Or it isn't a lie detector.
You're very trusting of Alan.
Just, I don't think people generally lie about every single thing.
Oh, no, I mean, I assumed Alan was lying all the way through. I thought Alan's going to be like the supervillain of the piece.
Right.
Like, he's come on the scene looking for Aquila. Like, somehow he knows about it. And his plan is to get Aquila.
Well, we do see an explanation of those lies in the end. Were you satisfied with Alan's answers?
No, I expected it to cut back in him to be going...
You think he still might be a supervillain?
Yeah, I think he still might be a supervillain. I think he's still... I think he's read about it, heard about it. He's seen some evidence, was tracking it down to this cave. And then these two numpties turned up, found it by accident, have stolen his thing. And he's now thinking, I just need to get it back. So he's tracked them down. He seduced the mum.
Yes, well, I was going to say, he does seem to like the mum because they were getting up to noughties.
Oh, yeah.
And Alan invites Tom and the mum to tea at Grosvenor Hotel, 4 p.m. I don't like to be invited to anything at 4 p.m.
No, it's an awkward time.
It's an awkward time. I don't like to be invited to anything at 4 p.m.
It's too late for lunch. It's too early for tea.
It's nothing. It's the nothing time.
Yeah.
Awkward time. Never invite me to anything at 4 p.m.
No. That's a standing rule.
Standing rule. Anyway, they go along and Tom confronts him. He's used his Polaroids for good. He's got evidence of a register of births, that Alan isn't his real name. He's got evidence that he's living with a woman called Mrs. Pritchard, that he's living in a different house than he said, that he doesn't work at a chemistry lab or anything. He works in a factory. And so he confronts Alan, a so-called Alan, with all these things. Away from the mum, we get the answers from Alan's mouth that he changed his name, which, to be fair to him, his original name was Percival Ivanhoe Pritchard. So you would.
Oh, you would. You would
change that. Or you'd go by Pip.
Pip, perfectly fine name.
But then people say, what's it short for? Percival Ivanhoe. You don't want to have that conversation.
No, also Pip Pritchard. That's just a bit too...
Well, I quite like it.
Okay.
I like a... What is it?
An alliterative name.
Alliterative. Not antagonistic. Alliterative.
Alan, that's an antagonistic name.
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah.
So, Percival Ivanhoe, and he does live with Mrs. Pritchard, but it's his mum.
Yes.
Because he's going through a divorce. So, that also explains why it said that he was married, because he is married. The divorce isn't final. And he isn't a chemical engineer exactly. He does work in a factory, but the factory makes chemical toilets.
Mm.
And he says it just saves a lot of chemical toilet jokes. Which was kind of his weakest point.
But I can understand it.
The one I agreed with most. Yeah. The one I found most believable. Like, yeah, I'm lying about that as well.
So there's no nuance in this Aquila lie detector then. It's just...
It's him who tells the parable about the elephants that we couldn't really agree on what the point is or the telling. But anyway, yeah, it's him that explains all that. And then the kid doesn't tell his mum.
No.
So it's like she doesn't get to have her, like, decision on whether he's told the truth or not. Truth is subjective, but it's only subjective between the two male characters. The mum just gets told whatever they decide is for her to know.
It does. Alan does give us one more gem about the truth, though, which is the truth is a very large elephant.
Oh, a very large elephant. Yes. Yeah. If you're lying, the elephant grows.
It's like Pinocchio.
Like Pinocchio's nose.
Yeah. Every time you tell
Pinocchio's
a lie...
Pinocchio's got a long nose, so have elephants.
Oh.
There's something in this.
Hello.
Something here. There's something here. When I saw that, the elephant surrounded by blind men, I just thought it sounds like when somebody's got the phrase slightly wrong. You know, it's like a nod is as good as a wink to a blind horse.
Two wrongs don't make a sandwich.
Elephants never forget. Blind... You can lead a blind man to water. No, that's not it.
But you can't make him drink a horse.
It's like I said to you, I couldn't think of that phrase the other day. That was about holes again, wasn't it? I was like, it's like a phrase of like, it's, the thing that I get wrong is, is that I, what I... The phrase that I can remember is, like, you can't put a square peg in a round hole. But the phrase that I want means the opposite of that. It's like every square peg has a square hole. It's like every something has a something. It's been driving me mad. If anybody knows what I'm talking about, they have to write in. They have to write in. It's like every hole's a goal. No, it's not. What it's saying is, like, every hand has a glove. It's like there's a thing for everything. There's a hole for every peg. But it's not that. It makes sense. I can't remember the phrase. It's like a square, not a square peg, because I don't think it matters that it's a square peg. It's a peg and a hole. I'm sure there's a peg and a hole. Circle gets the square. I don't know what the phrase is. Every hole has its... Mate. No, that doesn't make sense. Every hole's... No, it's not every hole's gone. I keep saying that. Every hole has its day. There's something for every hole. There's a fit
plug?
For every... glove. There's a port in a storm. I don't know what the phrase is.
There's a rat in me kitchen. What am I going to do?
There's a hole fits my goal. I don't know what... I don't know what the phrase is. I'm sure it was about holes. Why are we back on holes?
This really is the holes week on podcast.
There's a port in a storm. No. There's a circle in a square. I don't know what the phrase is. I was sure it was about pegs and holes. There's a thing for everything. That's the phrase.
Right.
There's a thing for everything. It's like horses for courses.
Okay.
That's what it means. There's a thing for everything. There's a... I can't stop saying holes now. There's a... what could go together? A plug socket, a glove, and a sock. I don't know. Sock. I don't know. There's a but it'd be a glove and a glove. It's just a glove for every other.
It's a hand and a glove. A hand and a glove.
It's a glove for every hand. No, there isn't. There isn't. There's a hand for every glove, but that doesn't make any sense. There's a something has for every something.
There's a switch for every light.
Yes, but
that's
no.
Not it.
And you know that I get confused with light switches. Those ones on the stairs, I never pick the right one. There's a mate for every pole. I can't do this anymore. Please, somebody tell me the phrase. Somebody, I haven't made this up, have I?
Thank you, because it feels like there's a phrase there. I just can't think of it. Please, people, write
there's
in.
There's a something for every something, and it's literally it's like saying there's a like a soulmate for everyone. There's another shoe. There's a shoe for every other shoe that needs a shoe to go with it. But right, some people no. Only have one leg.
We went through this when we did the shoe people. All right,
okay. There isn't a shoe for every there shoe. Sometimes shoes get lost. Because sometimes you can break one shoe.
Exactly.
But if you do break one shoe, take both to the cobblers. Let's leave this. I'm not good at phrases.
Okay, well...
What were we doing?
I think we're pretty much wrapping up Aqua. Because Alan has explained this phrase.
Alan has done his explaining, and the professor, who's not called Saunders, Hare, the archaeologist guy, has said there's 60 million, and in his view, it's all going to the landowner. So this is... There's no money for our boys.
Nope, that's it. It's horses for courses.
God.
It's elephants for blind men. That's what it is.
I mean, if you had an elephant, you wouldn't put a ring of blind men around you, would you? It's the last thing you'd do. You're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Where's your risk assessment on that?
Well, exactly.
Not in this day and age.
No.
Not in the current climate.
Oh. No, so this kind of wraps up the episode, really. Tom potentially has a new stepdad. He says he still doesn't like him.
No, neither do we.
But Jeff gets him to stand in front of the truth detector.
Mm.
And it turns out, yeah, he does like him. And he's just being defensive.
Oh, the kid likes Alan.
The kid likes Alan.
Yeah. We find that out at the end of the episode. He's being defensive, but I still don't trust Alan, and neither do you.
No, don't trust him in the slightest. No. Do not trust him at all.
Anyway, so that was that.
Yeah, so that was Aquila. Now, Liz, we have two questions to answer here. How do you like me now? And also, importantly, did this deserve to lose to the three other shows that beat it?
It lost to Rugrats, mm-hmm. Brum, and Bucky O'Hare. Okay, right. I'm going to say right now, it deserved to lose to Rugrats. Rugrats is an amazing show.
Mm-hmm.
It deserved that loss.
Yeah.
It even deserved to lose to Brum. Brum, again, is a classic. It's a much quieter, much more British affair than Rugrats, but it definitely head and shoulders above this show. Now, between this and Bucky O'Hare, right? Bucky O'Hare is my least favourite thing that I've ever watched. No, Sharky and George is my least favourite thing that I've ever watched. Bucky O'Hare is next. My least, my second to least favourite thing that I've ever watched.
Okay.
For this podcast.
Wow.
And I'm going to say to you now, I still think it's a bit better than Aquila.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Bucky O'Hare is trying to do so much that I just found it a confusing noise of stuff.
Mm.
This is trying to do almost nothing. This is like, we've got to churn out a show. Does anybody really want to make something? No. Put Romans in it. You know, schools have to do Romans. Oh, I can't be bothered. Just shoot me in the head. Oh, this show is so painful, so slow, and it hates itself. It hates itself. I did not enjoy this show. How do you like me now? I never would have liked you. There's a reason this has been wiped from my memory.
Wow. See, now I quite enjoyed this as a kid. I remember liking it. And I think now there's some appeal to it still. I do think it's a bit, I don't know, it has got a lack. There's definitely a lack. And I think that's kind of summed up for me in the mums, in the way the mums are in this.
If they'd have built the world a bit more.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think, you know, compare this to like something like the Demon Headmaster.
Yeah.
You know, that's got a real world built around it, really strong characters aside from the kids.
And there's some jeopardy in the mystery and that sort of stuff, whereas this just feels very low stakes, nobody cares. Just, what does it matter if anything goes wrong or happens? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think this is it. I think, yeah, every week they kind of like unlock a new thing on this ship, and it's just, by the time you get to the end, well, it can do pretty much everything. I think the last episode they did, they go to Mars and back on this
thing.
Yeah,
it's too much. You've given them the world, but you need something like pulling them back. Mm. I think I need a baddie.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's a big thing it's lacking. It's lacking a baddie. And maybe that's why I distrust Alan. I'm wanting a baddie in the show.
Where would you place it in the Rugrats, Brum, Bucky O'Hare triumvirate?
Well, for me, Rugrats, I think, is top. I think you're around there. I think I would place Bucky O'Hare above Brum, but that's because that's just a personal thing. That's mm-hmm. personal choice. I think... See, now this is difficult because I think there's a charm about Brum. I think I'm going to put this slightly above Brum, though, because there were times watching Brum that I just felt it was interminable and I just wanted it to end. Whereas this...
And you didn't feel that about this?
No, I didn't.
That is astonishing.
This didn't feel...
astonishing news here today.
I'm going to rank this slightly above Brum.
I would rather watch Brum on a loop for a year than watch any more episodes of this.
Wow, okay.
Yep.
Well, there we are.
There's a joy about Brum. There's nothing. There's no joy in this.
Well, that's your opinion, Liz.
Is that what we're ending on?
That's what we're ending on.
There's no joy here.
There's no joy here.
Don't go back and watch Aquila.
There's just elephants and blind men and possibly something to do with every hole having a fit.
Every hole... has something that goes in the hole.
Yes, factually, that is correct.
I don't think it is correct. There's nothing that goes in the Grand Canyon.
People go in the Grand Canyon.
They don't fit.
No, that's true. There's nothing to fill.
It's got to be a snug fit. Otherwise, you're not getting the phrase. You're not understanding the phrase.
Every hole can be filled by air.
No, that's not it.
No. Okay, we'll have to keep trying. We'll work on this. If you know the phrase we're talking about, please get in touch. There's a blank for every blank.
That's the phrase you need to fill.
There's a blank for every blank. Fill in the blanks. Get in touch. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. Get in touch. Tell us what you put in those blanks. Tell us what you thought of this episode, Aquila, anything else. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to rate, like, subscribe. We'll be back next time. Until then, Liz, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
And thank you everyone for listening. See you soon. Bye.